A modern AI assistant can write a poem, debug a Python script, explain how a transistor works, summarize a legal document, translate between languages, and draft a polite email declining a meeting. None of those came from a poem dataset, a debugging dataset, or a translation dataset. They came from one task, repeated at extraordinary scale: predict the next word. That is what pre-training is. It is by far the most expensive single thing in modern AI. And for the kind of model you actually talk to, it is also the simplest. This lesson covers what pre-training does, what data it uses, and why one objective produces general-purpose language capability when older approaches required a fresh model for every task. How this connects to phase two. The previous lesson closed phase two on BERT and its derivatives. BERT is an encoder-only model trained with two specific objectives: masked language modeling, predict words hidden inside a sentence, and next sentence prediction, decide whether two sentences appeared together. That is one valid pre-training recipe, and it works well for understanding tasks like classification. This lesson is about a different recipe, the one used by decoder-only models, which the Stanford lecturer flags as more than 90% of the cases in modern LLMs. Modern chat assistants and most open weights models you can download are decoder only. The pre-training recipe for that family is what this lesson is about. When you see the term pre-training in the wild, in a paper, on a model card, on a press release, this is almost always what is meant. So, BERT's MLM and NSP are real and were taught accurately. They just describe the encoder-only branch. Phase three starts on the decoder-only branch, where most of the rest of the curriculum lives. The old way, one model per task. 10 years ago, if you wanted a machine learning model to do something, you trained one model for that one thing. You wanted spam detection? Train a model on a labeled spam dataset. Evaluate on a held-out validation set, deploy. You wanted sentiment extraction? Different dataset, different model, train it from scratch. Topic classification, same again. Each task got its own model, trained from random initial weights on its own data. The Stanford lecturer uses exactly this setup as the running example, and it is a good one because the awkwardness lands fast. Spam detection and sentiment extraction are not unrelated problems. Both involve reading a piece of text and understanding what it means. The ability to recognize sarcasm helps with both. The ability to parse, "this product changed my life," in the worst possible way, helps with both. But under the old paradigm, every model had to relearn that ability from scratch, from its own labeled training set. This was a lot of waste. Most of what a spam detector needs to know is just English, and English is not a property of spam datasets. It is a property of the language. If you could somehow learn English first, then attach a small classifier on top for any specific task, you would only need labeled task data for the small thing on top. You would not need a huge labeled spam corpus to teach the model what a sentence is. That hypothetical is now reality, and it has a name: transfer learning, the paradigm modern LLMs run on. Transfer learning is the move from one model per task to one general model, then adapt. You spend an enormous amount of effort upfront teaching a model the underlying competence, in our case, language, on a vast unlabeled corpus. That stage is called pre-training. Then, for any specific task you care about, you take the pre-trained model and run a much smaller, much cheaper second stage to tune it. The expensive part shifts left. Pre-training happens once, on the company's dime. Tuning happens many times for many tasks, but each tuning run is small. Hundreds of examples instead of millions, hours of compute instead of months, and starts from a model that already knows English. This is the paradigm phase four will cover in detail: instruction tuning, RLHF, F, DPU, all the techniques that turn a base model into a chat assistant. Phase 3 is about the giant first stage. The rest of this lesson is on what happens during that first stage, what pre-training actually is. The actual pre-training objective for a decoder-only model is one sentence long. Given a piece of text, predict the next token. That is it. There is no labeled data, no human annotation, no task-specific signal. You take a sequence of tokens, you feed all but the last one into the model, and you ask the model to assign a probability to every possible next token. The model is rewarded for putting high probability on whatever token actually came next in the source. This is sometimes called the next token prediction objective, sometimes causal language modeling, sometimes just language modeling. All three terms refer to the same thing. A way to see why this works. Predicting the next word in arbitrary text exercises almost everything else. To predict that the next word in "the cat sat on the Hawaii" is probably "mat" rather than "roof," the model needs to know what cats are, what surfaces are, that cats are usually inside, that mats are surfaces inside, that "sat on the" is a positional phrase that takes a noun phrase complement, and that some choices are common and others are absurd. A surprising amount of world knowledge, grammar, and statistical pattern can in principle be coaxed out of a model that has gotten very good at next token prediction. The model is not memorizing sentences. It is, in effect, building a massive internal map of how concepts relate, which words tend to appear near which others, which kinds of things tend to do which kinds of actions, which categories of nouns fit which categories of verbs. Every training step nudges that map a little. After enough steps on enough text, the map starts to behave like an approximation of the world the text describes. That is not a small claim, and the reason it is widely accepted is empirical. When you actually run this training on enough data, the model demonstrably acquires the things you wanted it to know. Not by being taught them, just by being asked to predict next tokens. The data. As much of the internet as you can find. Modern pre-training runs use staggering amounts of text. The corpus is whatever you can scrape, deduplicate, filter for quality, and feed in. The lecturer points to one source by name, Common Crawl. Common Crawl is an open project that runs a web crawler more or less continuously and publishes the raw archive. The Stanford lecture cites something like 3 billion pages per month added to its archive. The lecturer points specifically to Wikipedia and Reddit as examples of the kinds of sites you find inside the crawl, alongside the broader open web. Code is also pre-trained on, often in multiple programming languages. The lecturer specifically names GitHub and Stack Overflow as the kinds of sources that contribute the code portion of the corpus, alongside developer forums where people discuss code. Text in non-English languages is included as well. Many models pre-train on a mix of natural language text and code in the same training set. Scale is measured in tokens. The lecturer flags this as the order of magnitude number to remember. Pre-training corpora run from hundreds of billions to tens of trillions of tokens. The two examples cited in lecture. GPT-3 was trained on roughly 300 billion tokens. Llama 3 on roughly 15 trillion. By 2026, Llama 4 Scout was trained on roughly 40 trillion tokens. The overall Llama 4 mixture is around 30 trillion, confirming the trend that 15T is no longer frontier scale, and that frontier scale has roughly doubled to tripled since Llama 3. Order of magnitude is the takeaway, not the specific number. The figure to keep handy is the trillions, with the leading edge in the tens of trillions and rising. You can think of the input to pre-training as anything written that is reachable on a large scale. The model is asked to predict the next token of that. Everything that follows, in every later phase of this curriculum, is built on top of whatever the model learned during this single objective on this kind of data. Why this matters when you use AI. The pre-training stage is invisible at runtime, but its fingerprints are everywhere in your interactions with a chat assistant. Three concrete consequences worth carrying with you. Knowledge cutoffs are pre-training cutoffs. When a chat assistant says, "I don't know about events after my knowledge cutoff," that cutoff is the date the pre-training corpus was sampled. Tuning happens later but adds little new factual material. The model knows what the open web knew at pre-training time, plus or minus. Some assistants today can also search the live web while answering, but that is a tool they use, not a change to their brain. Their core, unassisted knowledge stops at the end of pre-training. Phase 6, lessons on RAG and tool calling, will cover the live web case directly. Most "the model just made it up" moments are pre-training era statistics, not chat layer bugs. When a model invents a plausible sounding citation, conflates two similar people, or asserts a wrong fact with confidence, the cause is almost always that the model learned the statistical shape of things that look like this without learning the specific fact. Tuning improves how the model talks. It cannot retroactively add facts the pre-training corpus did not contain. The model's personality is tuning, not pre-training. A pre-trained base model is fluent but voiceless. It continues whatever you give it. The friendly assistant tone, the refusal patterns, the willingness to clarify, the structured response style, all that comes in phase 4. If two assistants feel different, they were tuned differently. If they feel the same on factual questions, they probably share a pre-training lineage, a worked trace of one pre-training step. A quick reminder before the trace: tokens are not always whole words. Common short words tokenize as themselves, but longer or rarer words split into pieces. So a word like might become two tokens, depending on the tokenizer. The next word framing this lesson uses is the everyday version. The technical training step operates on tokens. Phase 1, Lesson 1, covers tokenization in detail. To make the mechanism concrete, here is one training step on a single example. Suppose the source text is the sentence, "The cat sat on the mat." After tokenization, phase 1, lesson 1, it becomes a sequence of token IDs. To create one training step, we pick a position in the sequence, feed the model everything before that position, and ask it to predict the token at that position. Pick the token "mat" as our target. The model sees the prefix and produces, as its output, a probability distribution over the entire vocabulary, typically tens of thousands of tokens. For instance, the model might say, "The model is not just knowing the word mat." It is producing a probability distribution over the entire vocabulary. When mat gets 31% and roof gets 0.5%, the model has internalized that cats are more likely to be on floor coverings than on structural exteriors in general text. That ranking is what gets folded into the model's weights, one tiny adjustment per training step. The training signal is whatever was actually next in the source text, in this case, mat. The loss for this single step is, roughly, how much probability the model failed to put on my mat. A standard choice is the negative log of that probability, in this case is about. We use this loss to compute gradients via backpropagation and adjust the model's weights very slightly so that next time it sees the prefix, it gives a tiny bit more probability to mat. Now repeat for every position in every sentence of every web page in the training set. That is many billions of training examples for a large modern model. The loop runs across large GPU clusters for weeks to months. The cost is what makes pre-training by far the most expensive stage, the way Stanford CME 295 frames it. The math behind the cost is the subject of the next lesson. What changes during this loop is only the model's weights. The architecture you learned in phase 2 is fixed. What is changing is the numbers inside that architecture, very slowly, in a direction that makes the next token guess on the next training example a little less wrong. Common pitfalls. A few mistakes Daniel-shaped readers tend to make on this material. Naming them up front is faster than catching them later. A modern chat assistant was trained on chat data. No. The underlying base model was pre-trained on next token prediction over web-scale text. No chat involved. It became a chat assistant in a later stage, phase 4, through a process that uses a much smaller amount of conversation-shaped data. Trained on is a sloppy phrase that hides which stage you mean. Pre-training sets the language ability. Tuning sets the format and the personality. Predicting the next word is a narrow task. It looks narrow because it is one objective. It is not narrow because successfully predicting next words across the open internet requires the model to internalize an enormous amount of indirect knowledge. The narrowness is in the objective specification, not in what the model has to learn to satisfy it. All language models are pre-trained the same way. Not exactly. BERT, phase 2, lesson 7, is pre-trained with masked language modeling, not next token prediction. T5, phase 2, lesson 6, is pre-trained with span corruption. Decoder-only models, the family this lesson is about, use next token prediction. When a paper talks about the pre-training objective, it is using the convention of its own architecture family. Always read for which family. After pre-training, the model is ready to use. It is not. A pre-trained base model is fluent at continuing text, but it does not know that you are asking it a question, or that it should stop talking, or that some answers are unhelpful, harmful, or false. The base model is a language continuation engine. Turning it into a usable assistant is what phase 4 is about. What you should remember. Pre-training is one objective, repeated at scale. For decoder-only models, the dominant family for generative AI today, that objective is predict the next token. There is no labeled data. The source text is its own training signal. Predicting next tokens at internet scale produces general capability. Because the only way to be good at this objective on arbitrary text is to know the underlying material, the model ends up internalizing language, world facts, and statistical patterns across the corpus. This is the empirical answer to why does it work? Common crawl is the dominant data source. Most pre-training sets are built on a filtered common crawl snapshot, supplemented with books, papers, and other curated material. All of the open internet is a useful first approximation. Pre-training is one stage of a transfer learning paradigm. It is the expensive front-loaded step, run once, that produces a base model. Tuning, phase 4, is the cheaper second step that adapts the base model into a usable assistant for any specific task. Older one-model-per-task approaches are largely obsolete for language work. Different architectures use different pre-training objectives. This lesson covered the decoder-only Maoisha next token recipe. BERT family encoders use masked language modeling. T5 family encoder decoders use span corruption. When you see pre-trained on X in a paper, identify which family before assuming the recipe. The next lesson, phase 3, lesson 2, is about why scale specifically is what makes this objective work, and why most pre-training runs in the wild are smaller than the math says they should be. If you remember one thing, pre-training is one objective, predict the next token, repeated billions of times across the open internet. Everything else, tuning and alignment and reasoning, is built on top.